Welcome to the Child Care Business Podcast, brought to you by ProCare Solutions. This podcast is all about giving child care, preschool, daycare, after school, and other early education professionals a fun and upbeat way to learn about strategies and inspiration you can use to thrive. You'll hear from a variety of childcare thought leaders, including educators, owners, and industry experts on ways to innovate to meet the needs of the children you serve. From practical tips for managing operations to uplifting stories of transformation and triumph, this podcast will be chock full of insights you can use to fully realize the potential of your childcare business. Let's jump in.
And welcome again, everyone, to the Child Care Business Podcast. We're excited to have you, as always. And, you know, I say this every time, but I'm excited about our guests. You know, our marketing team spends a lot of time and energy trying to source individuals and experts from our industry that can add a lot of value to this show. And so I'm excited about today's guest. And this is actually going to be the first podcast that we air in the new year in 2023. And so in talking about the future, we have Kathy Petchel with us today. She's been in the early childhood education industry for more than 30 years. Many of you listening to the show have probably heard her name and seen her at different conferences and different webinars. She's been both a teacher and a center owner, and she's also an expert on hiring and training staff, as well as staff development and onboarding. And she's the head of business development with Hinge Advisors. And today we're going to talk about something it's actually extremely relevant. I actually, a couple of weeks ago, was at a conference in Nashville, and the conversation around this Generation Z and the new workforce coming into not only our industry, but into the economy in general, was a major theme at that conference as we talked to other providers. And so Kathy spends a lot of time on this topic. She's going to talk with us today about the workforce and Gen Z. And so, Kathy, welcome to the show.
Hi, Ryan. Thank you. Hi, everyone. I'm really excited to be here. It's my first podcast for you all.
Yes, but you are. So podcasts are not a new thing for you, though, because I always tell people I try to do a little bit of research before we have somebody on our show, but enough to be knowledgeable. But I don't want to know that much about you because I think it's better to be curious. But you do for Hinge Brokers, just for our audience. Can you talk a little bit about your role with Hinge in particular? And I saw on their website that Kathy refers to you as the content queen. So what does that incorporate for you?
Okay. So So first of all, I have the best of both worlds. I have a day job and a dream job. My day job is I'm still a center owner. I have three locations in Charlottesville, Virginia. So that's a college town, fairly higher end demographics. I've had it for 38 years. I started when I had my first baby. Very typical story from lots of the listeners. And so day job, I'm still very active in Bright Beginnings. Although we are transitioning to second generation, which is also very common in our industry, more common than not, actually, unless you're a big kind of franchise or corporate group. My daughter and son-in-law have recently moved to Virginia to start to kind of handle more and more and more. So that's also really fun. Also challenging. That would actually be a good podcast episode, Ryan, on second generation.
The handoff from first generation. And is that because I have a little experience. I know, we kind of have some ties from from ProCare's perspective, but is that Molly and
And Rob. Yes. Okay. Rob's from South Africa. Molly's been in the industry many years, and they have a baby, a 2-year-old baby, Leo. I'm a pippy, not a grandma. And that is another perspective. When you are a parent, your perspective of every classroom, as an owner, you're really wanting the quality. As a pippy, it's even worse.
Oh my gosh. Is Pippi a South African term that came from your son-in-law, or is this just what your grandson just started calling you and it stuck?
Okay, we can go there. This is a good story. So my daughter and son-in-law had a girl name picked out, and I thought, I need my grandma name and it can't be grandma. So unfortunately, or as life would have it, we picked the same name. We both picked, so their baby daughter name was the name my first choice name to be my grandma name. Well, my name got bumped. And so then I had to go to choice two, which was Pippi. So it's really after Pippi Longstocking, the old children's book, the little redhead girl that kind of causes a little trouble and, you know, is pretty quirky and whimsical. And everybody thought it was a good fit. And so sometimes he mispronounces it and calls me Pee-Pee instead of
Yeah, but it's endearing, whatever he calls you. And for the listeners aren't going to be able to see this, but Pippi fits because you're redhead, right. The whimsical piece, I guess that will come out over the course of this conversation. But okay, so pinning that, we're going to do a second generation, you know, handover from, you know, parents to children in the industry. Right. That would be a great episode. Yep. But as part of that, you mentioned your Hinge and you're still running your centers. And so you're balancing that.
So the day job, dream job. So the dream job is getting to work with Hinge and all the other owners and CEOs and exec directors for like the bigger groups, the smaller groups, the, you know, the one, you know, one off kind of mom and pop or, you know, single sites, you know, in all different demographics. And what we mostly do at Hinge is help people when they're ready to sell, because we have a great group of very qualified buyers and we run a very good competitive process. And our team is extremely experienced. And we've actually doubled in size in the last year, which is really fun. We're now Hinge advisors, not Hinge brokers. But my job at Hinge is client relations. It was the business development piece. And I kind of like morphed into senior client relations. And my job is really like you were asking about Content Queen. My job is to just engage with, you know, other owners and bring the best quality content, because I, you know, speak nationally, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times a month. I think I've done maybe 40 presentations since March.
Wow.
So really just working and helping people wherever they are. So if they're ready to sell, it's an amazing time to sell. But it's also an equally amazing time to grow because of the economy and some of the things we might get into in a few minutes. You know, they say, depending on what statistic you listen to, 20% of centers have closed in America, never to reopen again. Now that stat includes family day homes, and it makes a whole lot of sense. And so it's a buyer's market right now in terms of opportunity. It's a seller's market in terms of if you're a high quality program and you've got, you know, very good numbers in your P&Ls and a good demographic, really good time to sell.
Really good. So the valuations for centers in that space, because what you guys are seeing is, and it's an interesting comment, Kathy, because we talk a lot about this too. Obviously, our worlds collide a little bit in terms of, our overlap is maybe a better term, you know, market share and total available market in terms of our industry. And I think that's the number that we've heard as well, that through the pandemic, so many of these centers hung on as long as they could. But the adversity and kind of the headwinds became so much that we did lose, you know, depending on who you talk to, 15 to 25% of centers. But what you guys are saying is right now you're seeing a lot of the big chains and regional operations looking to grow right now. And they're doing that through acquisitions, like you guys mentioned.
Oh my gosh. So two ways. So if they don't want to pay the higher prices of, you know, that a center, someone that's been in the industry many, many years deserves and has worked for, and many people do pay that. But if they want another alternative, they could do green space. Is very, very popular. So it's dirt. You know, they're going to a demographic like in Austin or San Antonio or Orlando, Florida. There's different demographics that different groups want. And that would also include international. There's quite a lot of international industry in the American childcare market. So it's kind of win-win for everyone, but we help sort of sort all the details and we represent the owner. So what is the owner's goal? You know, is it second generation? Let's assist with that. Is it, you know, I want to grow. Okay, well, you know, if you can find an underperforming center in your area and approach them yourself, honestly, that's the best thing to do. You don't need an advisor or a broker for that. But when you're really ready to sell and you want to assure your legacy that, you know, you want to have a say in who's going to acquire you and all the kind of details, that's when you really want Hinge advisors. And that's why we're called advisors now, not brokers, because you really do kind of the full service. I create a ton of content, but mostly I'm a chatterbox, as you can tell. I told Ryan I was having a hard day, but I, you know, and then I just start talking shop and
you're happy.
So really, like, helping, it's what we do in early childhood. It's what you guys do at ProCare. How can you make things better for someone? How can you make numbers make sense? And when, you know, we've got our baseline numbers, like, we want you at least 70% full with FTE, full-time equivalents, but I want you to have them actually paying you also. We don't want a lot of debts. And, you know, and some of those things seem really obvious, but, you know, we have all different strengths, all of us. Most of us did not come into this industry with the financial strength. That's what Hinge brings. And quite frankly, when I joined Hinge, I did not have the financial strength I do now. I mean, obviously, I've learned so much. I had the early childhood piece and the people piece and, you know, those sorts of things. And that's very common for, I'm sure, all of your clients that, you know, you can really help them wrap their brain around goals and just small milestone goals to be more successful financially.
Yeah. And how did you get, so a couple of questions I had about like your path to Hinge. How did you get connected with Kathy and the group? Because, you know, obviously little different in terms of, like you said, you still have your day job, you're running your schools, but you're working with Hinge. Did you guys just connect through industry connections and it made sense? Yeah.
So it's a good story though. I fangirled Kathy. So do you know what that is, Ryan?
Yes, I do. I know that term.
Brain crush on someone. And so I heard Kathy speak at a conference, and it was a conference many years ago, maybe 10 years ago. And she was so riveting. And, you know, she has this like very calm personality, and she is extremely engaged about supporting an owner. She says, I've heard her say this many times, I'm here for you as an owner. I want to help you with all the, you know, tricks of the financial and the best practice piece. Of course, we've gone into operations now and staffing and whatnot, you know, as we've grown at Hinge, but no one else really advocates for an owner. People advocate for kids all the time, for parents all the time, for, you know, licensing and government agencies all the time, for, you know, all the other groups, but no one really advocates for, you know, a private owner. And you guys do that too. So anyway, I heard her talk and, you know, too shy to introduce myself at that point. But then a couple years later, I'm in several mastermind groups and she spoke in a smaller mastermind group and she's very savvy. She just reached out to me ahead of time and said, hey, let's have a drink. You know, I don't know you very well yet. I'd love to get to know you. So Molly and I sat with her, you know, in Miami at, you know, by a pool and just, you know, got connected. And I said, gosh, you know, I'd love to work with you. And it just kind of went from there.
That's amazing. And so you get to, as part of that organization, I know you work with client relations. So you're, as an example, if you guys identify an owner who's running a center that just starts to say, you know, hey, here's kind of my kind of career plan or exit plan. You know, I'm thinking I have this many years left. You guys are going to just start a relationship with the owner and just kind of walk through those years with them, whether it's, hey, I'm ready, or it might be 5 or 10 years down the road. And so you just kind of build those relationships with an owner so that you can work together when the time's right. Is that?
That's what it is. It's trust. I mean, everything in this industry, you know, I mean, we're working with people's children. So, I mean, bottom line is always trust. And also for Hinge, it's confidentiality. So when we start working with a client, you know, it's, we're helping them grow. We're helping them just improve. We're helping them think of a succession plan. And then a lot of that has to do with financial, which, you know, I mean, some people say things like, hey, can you help me find a CPA? I don't know if I sell my real estate, for instance, what is a 1031? Why would that be valuable for me to know? And so a lot of it is front end, we do the long game, I would call it. A lot of relationship building, giving really good content. So when I'm giving content, you know, I'm really playing a long game. A lot of times people are not nearly ready to sell, but I'm building a hopefully a very trusting relationship. And then we're inviting them to things. So like last week, I did a conference for Sequel, Californians for Early Childhood Quality Early Learning. And you know, I'll meet 50 people on a webinar and always provide my name and or my email and my phone number. I was in my Florida last couple weeks ago for the Florida NAEYC conference.
Yep.
Ohio a couple months ago. You know, different vendors and in different states. And I like to primarily go to conferences where there's owners or stakeholders, kind of like you guys, but good directors also know a lot of people, and you know, it's that relationship. So I can't tell you how many times I get emails, hey, would you just take a call with this person? They're thinking about selling and they might not be, you know, quite ready. And then we can talk them through it. So it's a process, but then also when someone's ready, they're ready. And so if they've already prepped themselves with, you know, they're, and I actually have a really good one pager I'm happy to send out to you or to any of your clients, 10 ways to increase value of your business, just easy things to do. And we also have some really good handouts that are just, you know, how to prepare to sell. And so, you know, clean up your P&Ls. ProCare's great at helping with all those reports, but also, you know, the light painting and deferred maintenance and, you know, all the staffing pieces and the training pieces, you know, there's, you know, it sounds kind of common sense, but when you're ready to check out, having those strategies ready to go is very helpful.
And having a clear punch list. And that actually is a good segue a little bit. I know when we started talking before, and actually quick side note, that one sheeter you have, definitely send it to Lee and I, and we'll include it in the show notes so that if people want to access it, they can. But one of the things I know you guys do, Kathy, is, you know, you go in and you talk with these owners about, hey, these are the things that potential buyers are going to be looking at in your business. And so we want to try to solve challenges. We want to try to get your business in a place where, you know, it's as attractive as possible for that valuation. One of those big topics that is happening right now is around staffing. And it's around, look, I have capacity, I have rooms, but I don't have enough staff, or I'm having problems with retaining my quality staff. And I know this is something you talk a lot about. And specifically, and maybe you can share this like a real life example, because I know before we started recording, you were talking about, I had a situation come up in my own center earlier today, but specifically Gen Z, because we all hear that definition. Can you talk a little bit about who that group is, mm-hmm. and what makes them different, and how you guys are talking to your owners about how to interact and employ that generation?
Yes, it's one of my very favorite topics because I think they're very much misunderstood. Of course, they're misunderstood. They're new to the workforce. They're, you know, every older generation is always like, oh, the youngest generation doesn't know what they're doing. And we got to let go of that. There are five generations in the workplace right now. They are our youngest. They are aged 10 to 24 right now. So for our purposes, let's say they're 18 to 24. So let's backtrack in our minds for a minute, a couple years. So where were those 18 to 24 year olds during the pandemic? Okay, they were either 3 years ago, just graduating from college, and, you know, then the pandemic hits. Oh my gosh, now they're home. So all their dreams, you know, remember when you graduated from college, you couldn't wait to, you know, move on, get not be back home, you know, start your life, move away, maybe get an apartment with your friends, you know, be a grown-up, adulting, they call it now.
Yeah.
They missed out on that. So even our oldest Gen Zs, you know, sort of had that rug pulled out from under them. Now we go a little younger, the ones that were in college. They were stuck at home talking to their professor on Zoom. I can't imagine anything worse for these poor kids. Honestly, like, they're supposed to be out socializing, you know, dating, being in clubs, doing college sports, you know, all the cool things you get to do in college. They have major losses. And I think we don't even really know what that felt like, or kind of the, we know a lot right now, the studies coming out about the educational losses of our elementary students with the reading and the math scores, you know, being years behind now, depending on which study you listen to or you read. But I have not seen a study yet on sort of the impact of Gen Z entering the workforce. And also, and I'm going to talk in a minute also about mental health, and don't let me forget, because it is the most important content I could share today, honestly. But so just to go back to what their experience was. So they've had a lot of losses. They've missed graduation. You know, grandma, grandpa didn't get to come see graduation. Grandma and grandpa might have died. You know, the losses are, you know, human losses, losses of traditions and milestones. Spring break. It sounds ridiculous, possibly to some of us. It doesn't to me, though. Missing those traditional moments that they looked forward to. Again, graduations. All those firsts. And then high schoolers, it's worse. So high schoolers, you know, missing prom, missing graduation, missing all. And so, and then now I'm going to go into two more really big losses. So those are emotional losses, relationship losses, milestone losses, Instagram selfie losses. You know, they don't have all the cool pictures, you know, and that's really important to them. The loss of education, huge. I don't feel they're as ready to be in the workforce. And so, and what I say, and this is, I don't think it's controversial to say this. I say it, and sometimes people kind of give me a weird look, but then every single person I've said this to has agreed with me. The staff I'm looking at now, I would not have hired in 2019 in large part.
Wow.
The quality of staff we're getting right now, again, I just gave one reason, the pandemic. They're not coming in as educated. Also, they're not coming in as experienced in the workforce. So if you think about, again, 18 to 24 year olds, now I'm focusing on, you know, like 18 year olds.
Right. So they quick question just on this group for some context. So when you, just as an example for your centers, and maybe you see this across other centers too, when you take the total of all the people applying for roles at your center, what percentage of those applicants would you say fall into that 18 to 24 of the total workforce that you're screening? What percentage fall into this category, would you say?
That is a great question. I don't have a straight answer, but I could get you one from my friend Travis at Indeed. Anecdotally, however, it depends on what you're looking for. You're looking for a director at zero. You're looking for a degree teacher and they're 18, it's zero. You're looking for a TA or somebody to help with your outdoor classroom, open and close your building and be just a fresh set of, you know, playful, great energy. You know, they need training, but then it's quite a lot.
Okay.
So it really depends on, you'd have to divide out all your job descriptions.
Good
like
point.
Open or closer, you know, summer camp, TA, assistant, that kind of thing.
So, good point.
But they're coming in with much less experience in the workforce. Their moms and dads wouldn't let them, swimming pools weren't open. They couldn't go be a lifeguard or a swimming pool attendant. They couldn't go do all those summer jobs. So I think our level of patience, I said to one of my directors yesterday, I think my mission in this life is to learn patience, because I keep struggling with it, because you just have to like take a step back, slow down to speed up. So they're not coming in as qualified. They're not coming in as experienced in the workforce. So we have to just, you know, really reframe the way we're working with them.
And I think that's a really important point, because I think the reaction, I think, you know, Rhonda Myers too, I just say, she was in Nashville and we were having a conversation specifically about this. And she was the one that actually said something that just, you know, kind of reframed this thought process for me, even, because I think a lot of people see some of the attributes that you just described, inexperience, maybe lack of maturity, maybe there's different ways people describe it, and there's a frustration about it. But what you're saying, and it's also kind of what Rhonda said, is we have to rethink how we view this this group, because it's our responsibility in some ways to bring them along. And it is going to be different than what we saw in candidates from previous generations, I think is what I'm hearing you say.
100%. Ron and I have a very similar philosophy, kind of like a heart-led, empathetic. And it comes from being like traditional teachers. You know, if you're really a teacher, you want to teach everyone, you know? And so just meeting people where they are. And what I say to my directors is, you know, and my teachers is, you know, we do that. We individualize and customize in the classroom, I hope, for every child's needs. Of course, we have to do that with our teachers. But there are some commonalities about Gen Z that, you know, we're talking about today that, you know, their needs are different. They also have some amazing strengths. So, you know, if we can meet them where they are and really nurture them, build them up, give them opportunity. And here's the other thing. A, they're not going anywhere. Everybody else is aging out. And B, and this is something I think people really forget, they are right now starting to become our parent consumers. If we cannot figure out how to work with a Gen Z as a staff member, good luck when you enroll them as a parent.
That's really insightful, because you were also saying, you know, and maybe this ties in a little bit to a little bit of that economic data too, but you were talking about Look, this is going to be our workforce pool in the years to come, because what we saw over the past few years is a huge exodus. Maybe it's globally across, all economies, but specifically childcare, a lot of baby boomers, right, retired early. And so that's one of the things that we're finding is this new Gen Z is replacing that group. And to your point, if we're constantly look at them saying, hey, you're different than baby boomers and you do things different, you approach work different. That's one thing I was sharing even with Rhonda in that conversation is we see this in tech, like the way that, individuals approach work and maybe how what we would define, when I say we, older generations of what hard work looks like, it's different. And if we put that label and expectation on, I think this is what you're saying too, Gen Z, rather than try to understand how they approach work, we're going to be frustrated, and so are they.
Exactly. And so that's where that creativity and thinking outside of the box. We're preschool teachers. We should know how to do this, guys. Like,
Yeah.
this is what we do. So how can we individualize and make it better for everyone? I mean, they have some amazing strengths. And they also have some hang-ups. There's
Talk about both those buckets. So talk hang-ups and then talk strengths of this group for me if you can.
yes. And then I also want to make sure we talk about sort of the economic piece of as we're aging people out, other strategies on that, because I think as one thing just before I do those two buckets is public schools. Remember how I said earlier, I may not have even interviewed the current
Yeah.
people in 2019 before the pandemic. Same thing. This is what we're finding with the public schools. And there's a strategy with it, I think. So public schools are kind of like raiding our good teachers because there's been this mass exodus, not just of boomers retiring early. A ton have retired early. And that's a statistic Travis from Indeed has shared with me recently. But public school teachers especially are retiring early, particularly the boomers. So the public schools are lowering their standards. I mean, we have, school bus drivers subbing now. It's and this is a national problem and we need to figure it out. And that's not my area. But I do notice, and I've lost several teachers just again this year. And that happens sometimes. But and then so they're rating us. Now we're having to lower our standards. And the danger on that is we've got to train people up as quickly as we possibly can, give them lots more oversight, supervision, mentoring. And so that goes back to what are their hangups and what are their strengths. So I just wanted to sort of give a little more context when people say, oh my gosh, why is this happening to me? It's that bigger economic picture and it's that bigger, I love how we led the way during the pandemic. We were the
Yeah.
first to figure out. Let's mist all the classrooms. Let's do, all our strategies we figured out. Now there's a lot of pushback on the, Department of Education's on, why did we close schools for so long? I don't want to
Right.
get political, but so buckets.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you the negative first because I think it really needs to be in the front of people's minds. And I hope they stay on the podcast long enough to hear the positives because that's really my goal. One thing that has come out, and there's lots of studies on this, is their mental health and their status on mental health. They are because they've lived because all these losses, being stuck at home, just kind of on screen time instead of engaging socially. And we know they don't engage socially as much as they're on their screen. They're on. This is the generation that can has an attention span of 8 seconds. I think that's a little bit of a stretch, but that is one of the statistics.
And this is the generation, am I right? Did Gen Zers grow up with phones and in their hands, meaning they don't ever remember a time really where those weren't part of their life? Okay.
That's right. That's exactly right. And they also they can navigate like 8 screens at once. I mean, it's just, crazy.
Amazing.
No, 5 screens at once. Sorry, 5 screens at once. 8 second attention span,
Yeah.
and everything is quick, 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 quick. So training should be quick. Responsiveness should be quick. Answering questions should be quick. We need to. And so back in the day, even in 2019, we could ask for a resume when we're hiring anyone. let me see your resume. Now I'm going to check everything. I mean, what can we let go of to just engage with them person to person? And I think the first question we need to be asking Gen Zers when we're interviewing them, when appropriate, is, you know, tell me about your experience during COVID. I think that's going to give you a lot of insight into, you know, kind of their mental journey. You know, and I'm not saying assess their mental capacity. I'm just saying, in general, what was it like for you? You know, were you at home? Because another really cool thing about Gen Z is that they're very family oriented. And so I love that. I mean, that's you know, we're family oriented. That's all we do. We work with families. So to have a generation that's being, you know, known as family oriented, why? They're stuck at home with mom and dad. They might've been upstairs in their bedroom on their phones, screen, you know, screens and whatnot, but they were at home. And so we know Gen Zers rely on what their parents think more than, say, a millennial. Millennial, you know, there are little sassy sallies. They're like, tell me why. Let me give you a better idea. I have two daughters that are millennials. So no disparagement meant, but they just grew up. They're kind of the gold sticker generation. You know, oh, you tried it, soccer. Yay, you. Here's a trophy.
Everybody gets a medal. Everybody wins. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So not so with our Gen Zers. So the Gen Zers, the mental health piece, and these are their three biggest fears, which affect, I mean, which 100% played out with my team. The number one biggest fear for a Gen Z, and at least, and this is now current research, is, there's three. The number one is suicide. Watching their friends commit suicide, think about committing suicide, being so depressed about suicide. I talked to my team about this. I talked about the five generations in the workplace about a month ago at one of my staff meetings. Three of my staff were Gen Zers. All three of them had an emotional reaction when I talked about it. And two of them said they had firsthand experience with suicide. One, a close friend, and someone had three people in her high school commit suicide during the pandemic.
Wow. And
it like totally changed the tone of the staff meeting, because now all of a sudden you have to go to empathy. You have to, the rest of what I had on my agenda, you know, that was just so riveting. And then of course I met with each of them afterwards, because it ended up triggering emotions. So, you know, it's so relevant. And who knew, you know, I have like 20 staff sitting in a meeting one night, and three of them were Gen Z, and all three of them had, you know, a story to tell. And what was kind of beautiful actually was all the other generations. I have four generations in the workplace at this particular location, from boomers down. Everyone kind of had an aha, mouths were open. The second one is shootings, mass shootings, not just school shootings. You can go to a bar and be, you know, the mass shootings is terrifying. So suicides, fear of mass shootings. And you think about like, what was I afraid of? I'm a boomer, you know, when I was their age. I mean, the Cold War, maybe a little bit, but not, you know, I mean, and so this is like real-time school shootings, real-time shootings in supermarkets and so on. So that's, you know, very legit. And then the third one, which I always laugh about, and everybody laughs when I tell them this, global warming.
Those are the three things. Okay. That's the third one.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm like, oh, that's sweet. I'd rather you worry about that, because there's more we can do about that. Well, maybe, maybe not, but we've got work to do. And so I think that's really interesting.
Those are really interesting. And, you know, the proliferation of like how all of that stuff is constantly in front of them too. You know, I mean, I think, I don't know all the ways that social media and the way we have access to information has changed that. But to your point, like, you know, back in the day for me, it's like there was the news. I didn't watch the news. My dad did, but there wasn't really like this constant influx of bad news. But, you know, now anytime something like that happens, it's nonstop. And so, yeah, that's interesting that those are real. I have two kids. Actually, I have a 20-year-old and a 22-year-old. So they both fall in this Gen Z. Mm-hmm. And some of the things you're saying like resonate, because those are the things they've lived through. You're right.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just, you know, maybe not all of them, but, you know, this is a particular study. And I thought it was pretty eye-opening. And my Gen Zers concurred. More so with the first two, I think it maybe depends where you live and sort of the political arena where you are and whatnot on the global warming. But I loved that one too. I'm like, they care about the earth,
Yeah.
so I liked that too. But yeah, Gen Z. Now the positive on Gen Zs, there's more positives.
Love it.
Well, they're incredibly savvy technologically, and so we'll just start with that. The attention span super quick, the responsiveness quick, they're impatient. And so what does that mean? Like in a preschool, think about it. Well, you haven't had a two-year-old in a while, Ryan, but I have a two-year-old little nugget because I'm a pippy, right? Their attention span is like a Gen Z attention span. And so I think that's really cool. How can you match that up? What classrooms would be, really fun? Like, most two-year-old classrooms, there's a lot going on and you're moving children from area to area. They're interested in blocks and now they want to go do dump trucks and now they want to go outside. And so that's a great match for a Gen Zer who wants to be creative and move around a lot and, gets bored easily, kind of like a little one. So I think, and I don't mean disparagement on either age group. I just think, that energy match is kind of cool. Other things about Gen Z, and I'm gonna refer to some of my notes. They're very I said family oriented. They're also very, of course, they're wired. They spend 6 to 9 hours a day wired on media. Honestly, I think it's more than that. I don't agree with that stat.
And when you say wired, you're not like talking like they're always drinking caffeine. You just mean like connected, Yeah.
Technologically connected.
Okay.
They're not, I mean, they go to the bathroom with their cell phone. Actually, a lot of older people do too. But they're not without their cell phone ever. And they can, their ability to text quickly and their ability to, all the urban dictionary kind of phrases, they're inventing all of that.
Yeah.
One thing I love about them for our market, I'm a boomer owner, had my schools 38 years. I understand marketing. But I rely on my millennial children to really help. But guess who does the best job? The Gen Zers
Indeed.
with TikTok. Get them to do quick 30-second TikTok videos for enrolling, for hiring, for pushing out your USPs. One thing we do at Bright Beginnings is outdoor classrooms, and then have them do a 30-second TikTok on your outdoor classrooms on anything special about you. I also love the idea of them doing TikTok videos, or it could be Facebook Live, but similar, something quick and not perfect. Millennials like that sort of perfect TV show, sort of that aspirational TV show. Gen Zers want authenticity. So if you're trying to, how great is that?
Yeah, no
So
kidding.
do an authentic TikTok, where the teachers are wearing their tie-dyed shirts. And they're showing a typical day and they're rolling their eyes when a kid does something funny. And it doesn't have to be perfect because perfect, remember, we're appealing to
That
Gen Z
same
as parents.
demographic. Yeah.
Yeah. So I love that. But some of the other fun things. So this is a research assignment, homework assignment for the audience. Look up how Oreo cookies during the pandemic reached out to Gen Zers. What they did, so oh, this is another the really cool thing about Gen Z. They really are kind of colorblind, diversity blind. They've grown up in an America that is very diverse, culturally diverse, racially diverse, just diverse. A lot more openness and understanding on differences of people. So they I grew up, our country looked very different when I was growing up. So these guys, very open, very, very open. They're open to, gay rights, children's rights, people
Everything.
needs everything. And like, how great is that for a preschool?
Yeah, we can learn so much from that. Yeah, this is super interesting to me. And you, one of the things that I know that our marketing team had, I don't know if they got this from you or they had seen it in some of your content, but you mentioned Oreos, but there was something about companies that Gen Zers gravitate to. And I don't know if that's like specific companies or the type of like brands that they that appeal to them, but is there something to that? Am I making this up or
No, you're not. I have content on that. Yes. So Oreos, made a concerted effort. So they did the Rainbow Oreos. Well, Gen Z's just ate that up. Of course, they like Oreos, but they really liked that,
Inclusiveness, and yeah.
Exactly. The whole inclusiveness of like how cool. So, and actually, a friend just did, it was election day recently. I know we're in January, so we're kind of fast forwarding to the future. But back on election day, a lot of preschools do this. They have an election for with the kids. We're going to vote for our favorite donut. Well, this school voted for their favorite cookie, and I could not wait to look and see what it was. So it was Chips Ahoy versus Oreos. And I thought, so now this generation in preschool are called alphas. I could do a whole podcast on that too if you want, Ryan. They're really cool.
Wait, that's a whole new. So this generation, like going from Gen Z below that, are now called alphas. So
Yes,
there's.
because remember, Gen Z starts at age 10, so not any
Right.
younger. So my little grandchild, which my little nugget I call him, is an alpha.
Leo.
Yes, Leo.
Leo. Yeah. Pippi calls Leo an
Yes.
alpha. All right. So that is another pin for a future podcast talking about alphas. Okay. But
It
we
is
had
because
an.
alpha parents had these babies during COVID.
Oh, yeah.
So, oh my gosh, I could write a book about that one because I watch it. I mean, they're on camera all the time. It's like the Truman Show for these kids.
Yeah. It's like that. Yeah. The COVID babies. That is interesting. You have a perspective, which is such a unique perspective for you, Kathy, to be able to see all these generations in the workforce, but now you actually see, these children as well. So I didn't mean to interrupt you, but that's cool.
Super cool. So Oreos had a good thought. Another brand everybody likes is Starbucks. That's not one I'm going to focus on right now. But these guys love Vans shoes, Apple, anything Apple, Apple, the technology company, not the fruit,
Yep.
Instagram, although TikTok even more. They're going to do Spotify. They're not going to do any other kind of music group. Doritos, Marvel movies. So if I'm working with my Gen Zers and a Marvel movie is coming out and we're doing a staff fun, let's go get pizza and a movie, Marvel movie would be a really good choice. They like Nike. So how do we engage with them with Nike, the brand Nike? This is a really good one. And when we do high school, if I go to a high school to do like a little recruiting fair, and I recommend this highly. We as an industry, especially the older people in the industry that are wanting to leave a legacy, we need to really reach out to these Gen Zers as they're coming out of high school and ask them to consider a career in early childhood. Forget about elementary school and middle school. Come to
Yeah.
early childhood. And here's why. And so go to the high schools, talk to the guidance counselors or the principal, and then have a table set up with, fun little gift cards and snacks and don't be cheap. Get the like good water, not the Walmart water. Get the Fiji water. Treat them. And
Yeah.
but definitely Chick-fil-A gift cards. Chick-fil-A, they
That's a winner, huh?
yes.
Chick-fil-A gift cards.
Your
Okay.
kids like Chick-fil-A?
I'm sure they do, yeah.
I'm sure they do too. So
Yeah.
Chick-fil-A, Target is a big hit. Walmart also, and then YouTube, they because remember attention span is short, so they're gonna flash through YouTube. Here's this little, and also on Facebook the shorts, anything short, flip, 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 flip. You probably see your kids doing that, and it's just like just quick, quick, quick,
Yeah.
and think about like their brains, they're probably on overload,
And
and so.
how they work. But what's so interesting to me that I love about that conversation is, and this is I think why we wanted to have you on the show, Kathy, is I think a lot of people look at those things and focus on the negative aspects. Like, why can't you just sit still for 20 minutes and watch this show or this lesson? And instead of fighting against that, what you're kind of saying, if I'm hearing you right, in some ways is say we have to embrace that. And we have to, maybe there's some mentorship because there are things like all of us have that need to be developed in this generation, but we're probably not going to change them. We're not going to change this generation. So we either are constantly going to be frustrated that they're different than previous generations, or we're going to embrace it. And because they, like you said, they're going to be the working force. They're going to be the parents that have kids at centers and all those things that you're mentioning, but it's embracing it rather than fighting against it.
It is, and it's so it's embracing it, meeting their needs, meeting them where they are, and it's also back to mental health again, really understanding what their capacity is right now. they're going to feel better. They're, you know, but we've got to build them up and build the confidence, because we're kind of their high school teachers in a way. If they, you know, they missed out on, or college, they missed out on a lot of learning opportunities. And so we're it. I mean, even down to like financial savviness, you know, if you're paid $16 an hour, here's the amount of taxes coming out. You know, some of them didn't have that. Now, some of them had very rich home environments during the pandemic, but most people struggled because the parents were trying to work from home. Maybe they had younger siblings they're doing school, you know, homeschooling with. It was, you know, I don't really know too many people that said, I just love the pandemic.
Right.
You know? I mean, some people embraced it, but in general. And so yes, they're digital natives, but their multitasking ability, like you said, can't you just sit and watch TV like as a family? Nope, I got to have my phone. I got to have my popcorn. I'm texting someone, flipping channels. That's what they do. So, but in a preschool, multitasking is pretty nice, actually. Can you do, so I like to give them more of a flex schedule and build them up. I had somebody that was out for, you know, I just needed a few days out. And my normal 2019 would be, oh, good grief. Come on now. But
yeah,
that's judgmental. And I don't do that now. Like, you take as much time as you need. So on the hiring end, it's really important we're overhired. I'm not saying to be overstaffed, because labor costs are very high. Yeah. You might need to be overstaffed to get them trained, but definitely overhire. Guess what Travis from Indeed is telling me most, a lot of companies are doing, if they can afford it.
They're overhiring.
They're hoarding staff.
Mm.
Not only are they overhiring, they are keeping them, paying them, and not letting them go, because they know if they lose them, what heck they went through to get them to begin with. So overhiring and hoarding.
And that's a really good, because like, I see this too, like in our, you know, in our culture where, you know, the idea of mental health days, or it's just been too stressful the last couple of days, I just need a day to unplug. And I think future previous generations have been like, rub some dirt on it. Like, life is hard. Work is hard. Just, you know, deal with it. Yeah. But I think one thing that this generation is teaching us is, you know, that approach to mental health isn't effective anymore, or it's not sustainable. And so being aware of that and being empathetic about it, I think what I've heard you say is, you know, obviously every employee is unique. I know we're using generalizations and about that. Every individual is going to be unique, but for you, you're more accommodating to an individual. It's like, hey, this is a good worker, somebody who brings value that we want to invest in.
Yes.
And we're going to probably give them a little bit more flexibility than we would have in the past, is what I'm hearing you say.
And the other piece on that, to do that successfully, because, okay, now we're meeting their needs, we have to articulate that to the families.
Mm.
And we say to the families, you know, guess what? It is amazing. We are lucky enough to have four generations at our school. And Miss So-and-so is actually in one school. I have five generations. I have a traditionalist who just turned 80, Miss Tina,
wow,
one of my favorite people. So I've got, you know, one much older, and what she brings to the school is different than what, you know, a Gen Z brings. And so if you have four or five generations at work, celebrate that. Let the parents know. But on the other end, when, you know, the day notes aren't quite right, or, you know, the pink sock is lost, because, you know, Gen Z, their attention span could be somebody older losing the pink sock too. But, you know, I have a parent really frustrated with my Gen Zers right now. Here's what happened. Somebody gave the parent this gal's cell number. It's totally against my policy. We try to keep boundaries really tight. We do, you know, virtual day notes. They get, you know, not on personal cell phones. In fact, can't even have a cell phone in your classroom because I want eyes on children and engagement. Well, the parent just texting, you know, totally not appropriate at all. And so, you know, coaching a Gen Z on oops, and, you know, and then, but also articulating it to your parents. The parents know the rules, but just, you know, reiterating. And here's, you know, even though Gen Zers are very accommodating and they say, oh, no problem, go ahead and text me if you're worried about little Sweet Pea. No. So it's for two reasons. It's to protect them and to reset some boundaries, but also to let them know, you know, we're working on training some of our new staff. I wouldn't necessarily say, here's what I know about Gen Z.
Right,
but
right.
Say, you know,
But acknowledging that, yeah, we're working through training. Now, do you find, I know we have a couple more minutes here, and talking a little bit about this generation in your workforce, are you finding that, so when you hire Gen Z and you start talking about like career pathing, like I know that's been a thing for everyone when they enter the workforce, like, hey, how do I get to that next step? And what is the path for me to go from an assistant teacher to a teacher and kind of move? Are those conversations different with Gen Z for you guys? Do you find that they're like career oriented, or is it different in terms of like, we're just gonna kind of meet you where you are and see how it unfolds type of thing?
I think it's what you said earlier. It's, meeting them where they are, but I think, and you also hit on maturity. I mean, we know human brains really don't fully develop till like age, especially for men, age 28-ish. So for them to, really problem solve and really process through something, it's, much older than we realized. So again, that's maturity, brain development, life experience, character, how their parents raised them, their education, a million things, lots of good factors. But in general, the older they are, the more serious they get. They start getting that paycheck and they think, oh, I would like this job. What else could I do to make more money? And so I like, so I think so, it's a mix. But certainly it's something when you're hiring, a Gen Z or anyone, here's where I'd like you to be in a couple years. Where would you like to be? I mean, many times we do so well with any generation that they want to go to college. So if it's somebody that's not, have a college degree yet, we get them really excited about working with children. And many times they go to nursing school. Either I lose to education or nursing many times. I don't usually have somebody, I'm going to go be an architect because they
That's
play with
not
magnet
bad.
tiles. That's the kids. I want to go back to my two statistics on Gen Z. 27%, I think it's a pretty high number, report poor mental health right now and fears about the future. And that's the specific mass shootings, suicide rates, and global warming. And 90% right now, and I can give you that research, but I off the top of my head, I don't have it in front of me. Report 90%. So 9 out of 10.
Nine out of 10 report what?
Report experiencing physical or emotional stress, feeling depressed, sad, anxious, or unmotivated kind of often. And I asked my Gen Zers that, and then I asked the whole team, like, guys, how is everybody feeling? Like, take that temperature check at your meetings. I do a day note at the end of every day for it's a sign out log. And I have everybody score how they're feeling when they leave, 1 to 10. How was your day? 1 to 10. And I'm looking for 7 and above. Below that, as a pattern, we need to talk. So it could be one day it's a 6 or a 3 because they had a migraine and they forgot their medicine. Okay, that's a one-off. But that pattern could be a red flag on mental health.
And needing to be aware of that. I mean, I actually really like, I think that's a really practical and tactical takeaway from this. It might be a good way to kind of tie this up too, around the idea of like understanding who you're hiring, being patient and empathetic about the fact that, they went through a pandemic and they went through a really unique, piece of history, and it impacted them greatly, and it's influencing how they operate in the workforce. And we have to be, maybe more than anything, have to be aware of that mental health piece, which I think, is a conversation people are more and more comfortable with, but it is still new in a workplace, I think, to have that awareness. I love how you said, like, I'm not asking you at the end of the day, like, what tasks did you complete and what accomplishments did you reach? It's like, how do you feel? Because that's going to impact all the other things that we need to do.
And then it could, and then there's a conversation. And what I ask them to do is to eyeball to eyeball. It's sort of like an old-fashioned floor time. Dr. Stanley Greenspan, any of you oldies know who that is from till, as it's a parenting method. Each parent engaging with each child about 20 minutes a day, the child getting to choose what to do. So I kind of took that and said to the directors, they look, they read the sign out log, eyeball to eyeball them and see how their day was. And then you're going to alleviate a lot of stress for you as a director. If they're thinking about calling out the next day, you're going to have a little heads up. You might be able to ward off something. You might be able to solve a problem really quickly. I wanted to paint yellow bumblebees today and we're out of yellow paint, gosh darn it. And so, okay, I'm going to get that yellow paint tomorrow morning. It's going to be in your classroom, you know, and just like sometimes it's little stuff.
Yeah, little things that you can do to address it. So, Kathy, if people, I love this content. It's such an important topic. And I hope that we get a chance to have a follow-up to this. You've given a couple good ideas on future episodes. But if people listening to this show, I mean, it's Kathy Petchel and it's K-A-T-H-E.
Yes.
Last name P-E-T-C-H-E-L. Correct.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to spell that. So everybody who wanted to maybe do, you know, a little research and find you online, but if people were interested in Hinge or interested in some of this content you're sharing, is there an easy way to find you? Maybe the website for Hinge or an email?
Probably just reach out directly. I have actual content slides already created. I've done, I think, 4 Gen Z different, and I customize content queen, of course, that I am.
Yeah,
I customize for every group I speak with. So they could email me and I have slides I'm happy to share, but my email is kpetchel@hingeadvisors.com.
Perfect. And we will put that in the show notes. And along with, you know, Kathy, any content that you might think would be good to go along with this episode, if you share that with us, we'll put it in the show notes for people listening as well. And sure. And look, I know you're extremely busy. I know you're coast to coast doing, you know, things like this. So we really appreciate you carving out some time to speak with us. And it was a pleasure. You did a great job.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. And I'm a big ProCare fan. So thanks for encouraging me to jump on today.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Childcare Business Podcast. To get more insights on ways to succeed in your childcare business, make sure to hit subscribe in your podcast app so you never miss an episode. And if you want even more childcare business tips, tricks, and strategies, head over to our resource center at ProCareSoftware.com. Until next time. Thank you.